afternoon, everyone. Reverend, you here? Thank you.
Yes.
Lead some prayer.
Thank you for standing up, everyone. Can we bow our heads? Father, in the name of Jesus, name above all names, we come to you one more time today. First, we want to thank you for getting us here. For there's many that did not wake up this morning, Lord God, I thank you for getting us here. Heavenly Father, James 1:5 says that if anyone needs wisdom, to ask for it, and you will give wisdom. So I ask, dear God, that you give supernatural wisdom to members of the city council, the mayor, the city manager, and the city attorney, the chief, the deputy chief, and also the chief of the fire department, and every other leaders throughout the city. But most of all, dear God, I ask that you be glorified out of this meeting. And I pray this all in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Amen.
Amen.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Angel, if you'll call the roll for us.
Sure. Mr. Gwynn.
Here.
Mr. Musley.
Here.
Mr. Hilty.
Here.
Mr. Molliver.
Here.
Mr. McLeod.
Here. Okay. Going to go ahead and do the annual President's Award. I've asked that Mr. Zober help me with this, if he could.
Thank you. On behalf of Council President McLeod, we'd like to bring the annual President's Award. As many of you may be aware, once a year upon the exit of our current City Council President, we select one or a group of employees who performed outstanding for the city. The President's Award was established in 2011 to grant recognition specifically to one or more employees for their outstanding performance in the prior year. For this year, the nomination was based on our core values being customer focus, integrity, diligence, knowledge, innovation, efficiency, and leadership. This year's award winner is Barbara Carnival from our customer service department. Barbara, would you come here, please? Specifically, Barbara has been able to astonish our customers through the many challenges that she faced on our software upgrade. She's been able to police herself and pace herself as well as provide guidance to our team. Barbara takes ownership of her work and knows the utility business quite well. She's a champion of positive change and she serves as a leader teaching everyone else in the city how to maximize utilization of that system. And Barbara, we very much, and on behalf of the President, we very much appreciate what you've done for the city. Okay. One more little item to get out of the way. I have a few awards for our council members. Or gifts, excuse me.
Excuse me. I guess I could just hand them out this way. Mr. Musley?
Thank you.
Mr. Mahler? Mr. Mayor? Mr. Hilton? Of course, Ms. Rich isn't here, so I'm gonna hand that to... I got one too. I want to thank each of you for helping me out this year as we had some very interesting and trying meetings and had to toss a few people from time to time. It was quite unexpected, but anyway, I do appreciate all the help. I thought we had a very smooth year and I could not do it without the help and assistance of not only staff, but council members and of course the mayor. So I do appreciate it and I've enjoyed it, but I look forward to the work of our next president.
Been a pleasure.
Thank you.
Okay. We're going to move forward and I'm going to adjourn the meeting, sign die. And now we're going to go with our election of our council president. And I will need a motion.
I so move.
For Councilman
Jay Musler. I'm sorry.
Have a motion. Do we have a second?
Wow, I'm overwhelmed.
That's a showing of support.
I'm sorry.
That's kind of a formality, but we have to do it that way.
I know it.
And
Mr. Hilty seconded.
We had a motion and a second. And do we have any public comment on our incoming president, Mr. Musley? No public comment. Back to council. Call the roll. You have to vote yes for yourself.
Mr. Mahler?
Yes.
Mr. Hilty?
Yes.
Mr. Musley?
Yes.
Mr. McLeod?
Yes. Okay. And we're still going to need to elect a president pro tem. Mm-hmm. So I'll need a motion from somebody to do so.
So moved.
You got so moved for yourself? Or?
No. I'm sorry. You needed a motion to take nominations, right? No.
And we're taking nominations.
Yes, right.
I nominate Mr. Hilty.
Okay, we have a motion. Do we have a second?
I'll second. Thank you, if I can.
Sure. I don't see any reason why you can't second.
Well, we've got limited numbers here, you know.
I don't think there's any issues there. We have a motion and a second. Any public comment on the pro tem? Back to council. Call the roll.
Mr. Musley?
Aye.
Mr. Hilty?
Aye.
Mr. Mahler?
Aye.
Mr. McLeod?
Aye. Now we're going to reconvene the meeting and I'm going to turn it over to Mr. Musley. Is that correct, Mr. Zobel?
Yes, that's okay.
Switch.
And
just take all your.
I'm going that way.
Here's all your other stuff.
Hey.
Everyone, Al, you're still working?
Yeah, give me a minute.
Can we pass that down to Mr. McLeod?
I got myself a gift, too.
It's okay. Ready?
I'm ready.
Okay, we'll reconvene the meeting and our first order of business is recognizing the esteemed leadership of our outgoing president, Mr. McLeod, who so ably conducted all those clandestine meetings. Oh, I'm sorry, Sue.
Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. McLeod.
Thank you, Mr. Musley. I think I should send one of these to Al. I wouldn't wouldn't be appropriate.
Probably not. Okay. I was just kidding about the clandestine meetings, okay? I don't want to read about myself in the paper tomorrow. Awards and presentation, SMART Program Awards, John Skillman and Grant Booth.
It gives me great pleasure to present these awards.
Thank you for the nomination.
They have a program called SMART, the SMART Program, which is saving after more, after renewed thinking. And what we like to believe is we have a culture of innovation here in the city, and that we foster an environment that encourages our employees to think about their common practices and how they might improve those practices and save the money, save the city money, or gain efficiencies. What I'm presenting to you today is two excellent examples of that. Since the program began in July of 2012, we've had 68 submissions from our employees recommending improved efficiencies or cost savings. The value of those improvements realized to date is $251,707. And in recognition of that, City Council has awarded, as the program provides, a percentage of the savings to our employees, a maximum of $1,000 based on the amount of savings incurred. So far, the city has awarded $11,463 to our employees for their innovative thinking. What we have for you today are two, as I mentioned, two excellent examples. John Skillman from our electric utility division. For many years, John, the electric substation has been doing oil maintenance on our transformers, our load tap changes, and our oil circuit breakers. The oil has to be filtered and heated and get the particulates out of the oil every year to keep them functioning in an optimum way. Prior to John's invention, we've been spending 32 to 48 hours of overtime costs just to accomplish what that effort takes in terms of recycling the oil, replacing it, or changing it. John came up with an idea to build a heater which heats the oil and can raise those particulates out of the oil, cuts our overtime in half. So far, we've already saved $10,680 on that. What you see on the monitor is the equipment that John and his staff fabricated in-house, built it, now deployed in the field. As a result of those savings, those initial savings just in overtime alone, again, $10,680, John will be receiving a $1,000 check from the city. So, John, thank you very much. A very cumbersome process for the city. The forms are incomplete. Oftentimes, a lot of information was not included in that process. Staff had to contact, IT staff had to contact our staff to get more complete information. That system, in turn, generated 5 additional emails that had to be handled as part of that service request. Grant and Will identified this free software called Spiceworks, which is available to anybody to use. Grant and Will implemented that software. It's working great. It's much more efficient for our employees, and it eliminates all that additional redundancy in addition to saving the $12,000 per year. As a result, these gentlemen will be splitting a $1,000 bonus check for that. So thank you very much for that efficiency and identifying that product for us.
Thank you.
Really appreciate it.
No, you got it. You nailed it.
Okay. Thank you, gentlemen, very much. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay, the next item on the agenda is public comments, and under public comments, we've had a request from Matthew Wardell with the Ocala Symphony Orchestra to address City Council. Matthew, you want to come on up?
Thank you. Matt Wardell, 910 Southeast Second Street. Mr. President, Council, Mr. Mayor, Mr. Zober, City Staff, I appreciate the opportunity to speak. As you know, a few years ago, we started a partnership between the Symphony and the City and a group of some other citizens that are kind of just forming a committee to find a solution for the City Auditorium. About 2 years ago, we began working on a memorandum of understanding, which we executed, and then that developed into a lease agreement that we signed about 11 months ago in January. Since that time, I want to update you where we're at right now, and then, of course, make a request to you so we can get this project off the ground in just about a month. We've raised about $2.2 million from private citizens. We've spent a little over $100,000 on some feasibility studies. We've done soil sampling. We've done minor demolition of the building to really get at the core of whether things are going to work there. We've developed a plan for management and a plan for design that we really think is effective. In a moment, I'm going to ask that I'll let Andy Copeland come up to speak, if you will, just to talk about the feasibility of the building. And we've got the preliminary hurdle. Just speak kind of about the community impact. Essentially, having raised the $2.2 million, we're kind of ready to move forward. There's some things that Andy will speak to, why we want to go forward now as opposed to waiting as long as we can. To do that, we're going to ask the city to contribute to this partnership of $300,000 for the next 3 years. I know that's a significant cost, and I know everything that we're facing, and it's a tough decision. We really believe that not only does the project make sense long term, because the Symphony and its group that has agreed to shoulder many of the maintenance costs and running the facility and all those types of things, but it's a great thing for downtown, and it really fits in with the efforts that we're all doing to get this place really happening. And we're seeing it every day, and I think it's going to be a great addition to what's going on. Before I talk too long, I'm going to let Andy speak on the building, and then Mayor Ortiz will speak, and then I can answer any questions or wrap things up. Please feel free to ask me.
Hi, good afternoon. Andrew Copeland. I'm an architect at KP Studio Architects, project architect for this project. I live at 2615 Southeast 25th Court here in Ocala. I got started with this project back in 2007, I think, when I was asked to serve on a committee by Mayor Ewers to figure out whether we wanted to tear the thing down or if there was a good use for it. And out of that committee came the recommendation to mothball the building, hold on to it because there was a lot of people that came forward. Hold a lot of memories for people. I'm sure a few of us up here that have been to proms in that building and experienced their condition. So it's really been a great experience for me to be able to circle back around this many years later and be involved in not tearing the building down, but going in and removing some of the past renovations, exposing the ceiling and the beauty of the building, and really come up with a real feasible plan for the center to use that building and use it well, and really become, we think, a gem for the Tuscaloosa area. You know that your plans for the Lineal Park and the connections and stuff that's come out of the studies for that. And just think this will be the kind of the crown jewel, especially up at the north end of the park. So we just thank you for your consideration. Just appreciate your help.
Mr. President, Mayor, Council, City Clerk, City Attorney, and all of you very dedicated and competent city employees. It's a pleasure for me to be here on this side of the podium. The arts are extremely important to our community. I was invited a number of years ago to serve on the board of directors of the Central Florida Symphony Orchestra. At that point in time, I kind of thought the Central Florida Symphony Orchestra would have been a group out of Orlando that was coming up here once a year to do their program. Didn't take just one meeting to find out that the Central Florida Symphony Orchestra was out. And when I accepted my membership to the board, I told them, I said, look, I have no knowledge of symphonic music, classical music. I enjoy it when I hear it, but I don't know anything about it. But I accept this position because I know from my experience as a councilman and mayor that the arts are extremely important to industry that looks to move into the community. And I know the years I sat on council, we talked about how we were interested in arts. Well, usually after the arts people left, that pretty much was the end of it. But I will hats off to the recent councils. You have taken giant steps in supporting the arts in the city of Raquel. Tuscarora Park is fast becoming an art park. I mean, the sculpture that are downtown, the activities that Melissa is having down there is drawing a lot of attention to Tuscarora Park. And I think that the renovation and the bringing the city auditorium back into community use will be the crown jewel of the Tuscarora Park. The partnership that's been formed, the work that's been done for the last 11 months, I think is a testament to what can happen when you get private and public groups working together. Next year will be the 40th anniversary of the Ocala Symphony Orchestra. And that's one reason that the request that's being made of you today is that with what you're going to do to help, we'll let the symphony celebrate their 40th year in their new facility, which will be dedicated to the symphony and also to all arts groups and community groups that have need for a meeting place of that caliber. I think all of you probably have seen plans. One's been finished so far. It is absolutely going to be a facility that you can call your relatives in other states and tell them what you have here in town. And I commend you on the steps that have been taken in the recent past to support the arts. The arts are extremely important to this community and the individuals that are here. And I hope that you see fit to work with us on this request. That Matt has asked you before. So anyway, you have any questions of me? If not, then Matt will be there to come back.
Any questions? Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Matt, did you want to wrap up with anything? Does anybody have any questions of him?
I think I'm good. I'm here to answer questions. And
okay. Thank you.
Good.
We'll bring it back to council then.
Okay.
Mr. McLeod?
I'm going to make a suggestion that we, just a suggestion that we kick it back to Mr. Zobler and let him sit down and talk with him. I mean, I'm very supportive of the arts. I have no problems there. But we've given a very lucrative package to this point. And I just would like staff a little more time to sit down and talk with them about this. I mean, that's my concern.
Right. That's kind of my thoughts, to send it back to staff and let them bring it back as an agenda item with the recommendation.
Right.
Absolutely.
Right.
Maybe some numbers.
I mean, I don't want to shoot from the hip tonight. I mean, again, we still have to look at the package in entirety from, you know, what we've given them so far and, you know, what we can or cannot do.
Right. In the future. Are we still maintaining ownership in the building?
Yes.
So, I mean, any
additional that we give, we still have the clawback of the building itself.
We still own the
with,
building.
With their $2.2 million that they are putting in the building, so it's a...
It's a long-term lease.
Yeah.
We retain ownership of the asset.
Right. So our risk is where do we find the money, actually,
right,
without undoing something else, and have we given too much and all that stuff. So I think your point is well taken.
That's just the suggestion, so...
Okay. Mr. Mullen?
Good suggestion.
Okay.
In the last 10 days, I've met twice with Mr. Wardell on site, and he's been kind enough to share his budget numbers with me, and I've shared my budget numbers with him, and I'm happy to continue that discussion with him and come back with a full report.
Okay. Mr. Wardell, does that meet with you?
Yeah, that works, and you know, I mean, we looked at that commitment as a council when we signed, or as a group when we signed that lease 11 months ago, and I guess I just look at that, of our options going forward with that building and how long we've been dealing with this building. You know, we could tear the building down, which is an option, and it's a $250,000 option to raise it. We could keep it mothballed and then hope at a later time that we find money to renovate it from within the city budget. I think, you know, you've got a lot of folks. You've got about 150 people that have contributed to that $2.2 million, all the way from $700,000 gift down to $5. And I think there's you've got a great plan here. I don't think you'll find many groups that are going to give to a city building over $2 million. And I think you've got a group of level-headed people that are wanting to make this thing work long-term. I know that group would like to see us take action and get this thing started. Because, again, if we can get some of this commitment now, and it's over 3 years because we've received some bridge loans to cover it until we can get everything paid off. But if we can do that now, that means you've got 200 people on that job site starting in February. It means you've got a building in 9 months that's ready to go. And the first year is going to bring 10,000 people downtown at a minimum. I mean, it's ready to go. And I guess that's why we're here tonight, trying to get some action, or at least some serious talk about it.
Well, I think you've caught our attention, and I think the proper way to do it would be to send it back to staff, let them make a recommendation, and bring it back as an agenda item with some pros and cons, and you know, we can put it to a vote at that time. But I certainly think you've got our attention.
Yeah,
we'll do it.
I mean, we're looking for a reason for Ocala to be a destination. That's obviously a cause to be
a
destination.
Tremendous destination. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, are there any other public comments about anything that's not an agenda item that you're going to speak about? Any other public comments? This would be your time to speak. Okay, we'll move on. There are no public hearings.
Excuse me, I got somewhere right here.
Councilman.
Who do we have?
The fire accelerant dog. She had the dog outside.
Oh, okay.
Very first accelerant canine. Her name is Gracie. She is a 2-year-old yellow lab.
Yeah.
She got a can of gas on him or
something? She'll look for it if you say the word. But we got Gracie through a grant with State Farm. It's one of the longest running programs that State Farm has. It's been one of their most successful programs that State Farm has had. And they partner with a canine group up in Maine called Maine Specialty Dog Groups. And what they do is they seek out usually yellow labs because of their temperament and they're friendly with people and they love to work with their owners. So they seek out these dogs that don't quite know what their companions for whatever reason, whether they're too excited or too mouthy or they don't know when to disobey an order, like don't cross the street if you're helping a handicap. You know, they might just obey the order. So when they flunk out of companion school, certain dogs are sometimes selected to participate in this program. I put in for an application, and we were actually awarded the grant. So we spent 200 hours in Alfred, Maine, learning how to be partners, which is different than being just strictly obedient and giving the orders, which is much easier. This is a two-way communication relationship that's growing. She stays at home with me. She comes to work with us at the fire station. And Dr. Studoff is her vet, so she doesn't have any fleas, but she is trained to detect accelerants at a fire scene. She does not care. She's non judgmental. She'll just simply let you know she detects it, and she passively alerts, which means that she will sit, and then she gets fed. This particular dog is a food reward dog, which means she never eats out of a bowl. She only eats when she smells accelerants, and she only eats out of my hand. So it's kind of like having an infant, is basically the easiest way to describe it. She is very young, and expected years of service for these dogs are usually 5 to 12, depending on what types of toxic exposures they're into. But I just would like to introduce her to you and thank you for her. And she is very good with children, so she will be going into the public school systems and private schools and helping the younger age group with fire education, especially the ones that are too young to see a firefighter in full get up. But, you know, 5-year-olds, sometimes 4-year-olds get frightened by that, but usually they love a dog. So Grace is going to have multiple roles. She just doesn't realize it yet.
Thank you.
Yeah, I appreciate the opportunity to speak to the city manager and president and mayor and council. I will tell you that the department and the citizens are the benefactor of two great endeavors. One, the benevolence of the State Farm Organization. It's the equivalent of about a $25,000 grant. Also, the benevolence of the community, Dr. Studoff, and some of the major businesses that are contributing, but most of all, Captain Moreland, who honestly, after 25 years of dedicated service in this profession, could have said, you know, I've earned the right to just enjoy my quiet time. I've taught people how to do what I do, and they're coming along behind me. But instead, you heard her say that the only way this dog eats is if she's working. So she's working in a park every day, trying to find accelerants that Captain Moreland places. It's a great dedication. It's consistent with our approach to our department organization that everybody gets involved. I just didn't think that we would have people get involved to this level. So we're very appreciative. And thank you for all your support as we went through the grant process. And she was successful in her first year of seeking the grant and getting it, which is very rare.
Very rare.
And
quite a blessing.
Thank you.
And she spent the month of August in Maine.
Wow.
Right.
Yes.
So, becoming partners. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. What's her name again?
Her name's Gracie.
Gracie.
And she is just 2, so.
Wow.
But she's very calm for a 2-year-old, which is unusual for this type of dog. Ready to go?
Yep.
You want to go? Let's go.
Uh-huh.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, next on the business, next on the agenda, there are no second or final reading of ordinances. General business A, adopt resolution 2015-18, setting the power cost adjustment rate for monthly electric energy billing purposes. Presentation by Diane Reichart.
Council President, Council Members, Mayor, I'm here tonight to tell you that the power costs are reviewed monthly, and as we presented last time, we're projecting at the end of fiscal year to have a $4.9 million under collection, with the PCA rate being set at 0.025. And as you know, in the past practice, we've not adjusted them monthly. As we see the costs going up and down, we wait till year end to bring that information forward to you. In September 2012, the PCA rate was set at 0.025, and we've made no adjustments since that time. So the past 2 fiscal years, we've used the rate stabilization reserve for $4.7 million in 13 and $6.3 million in 14. As part of the budget process, we have a key management practice called the use of the rate stabilization reserve. I've included that one-page item with a little bit of expansion on the explanation related to rate stabilization reserve, talking about the fact that we want to use that money to levelize rates, and there's 2 reasons. One is extraordinarily high expenses, and then low demand if we don't sell enough energy. As you probably know, that the portion of our PCA rate is included in our base rate, so this is the portion that's above that cost. And The other thing I wanted to mention on that part is that our procedures is we're going to provide this information to you quarterly from here forward, so you'll have the information rather than just waiting till the end of the year. You'll kind of know where we're at on a quarterly basis. So with that information, our rate stabilization reserve is currently at 20% right now. Our target is between 15 and 25, so we're right in the middle. And we would like to recommend that this $4.9 million shortfall be split 50-50. Rather than pass all of it on to the citizens, we would pass 50% of it to the citizens, and the other 50% would come out of the rate stabilization reserve at the end of next fiscal year. When we get to the end of next fiscal year, that'll put our rate stabilization reserve at 18% if we do it that way. So at that point, the recommendation is a resolution tonight that effective January 1st, the rate would increase from 0.025 per kilowatt hour to 0.02738 per kilowatt hour. So if I have any questions, I'll be happy to answer them. Otherwise, recommend approval.
Yes, Mr. McLeod.
Yes, sir.
Okay, if we go ahead and do this, and we have a year where electric usage goes up, that could change. What would that do if electric usage went up? Would that would help us in the future?
Yes. In other words, at this projection right now, we're planning to use 2.4 million of your rate stabilization reserve. So if sales go up and we don't have that much loss, let's say we don't lose 4.9 million next year, we only lose 3.5. Part of it's been passed on. Our rate stable reserve would only be utilized at 1.5 million instead of the 2.5.
So this is just an adjustment to keep us in within that.
Right.
And since we've had 2 years of negatives, you know, it feels like it's the right thing to do rather than, you know, we've been adjusting for 2 years, so.
Yeah, and it seems like we're in somewhat more of a growth pattern and more of a usage, which should help, I would think. I'm not an electric guru, but it seems like if there'd be more usage, it'd be in better shape.
So. Yes, sir. That's true.
Well, it's also controlled by cost of the fuel, right?
That's true. Yes, sir.
So not only just electric demand, but
right.
So you're projecting pretty much a stable cost of fuel?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Yeah.
Mr. President?
Yes, Mr. Hilton.
Have you, in your thinking, taken into account that somewhere in April or May, we are probably going to get the money back from Duke Power, and that should go into the rate stabilization fund?
Yes, the $12 million should go in the rate stabilization fund. That's exactly true. And then we don't know what's going to happen with the Taylor swaps at that point. So it would be best for that to happen first, see what happens with the Taylor swaps by October of next year.
I just want to make sure that
We're back here, then we can make that decision.
I know what the whole pie is all about there, just making sure. So.
Yes, sir.
And I bring that out because people will say that, well, you're going to be getting this money. Why are you raising my rates?
Exactly.
But that's the point I'm trying to make, is that we have this unknown out there with the Taylor swaps. Yeah, we've got money coming in, but it may go right out the door to cover something of that nature. So,
yes, sir.
I just wanted to make that clarification.
Good point.
Mr. President, I move approval.
Okay. And a motion for approval. Is there a second?
So moved.
Second by Mr. Hilty. Is there any further discussion by council? Is there any public comment? Bring it back to council. Any further comment? Call the roll.
Mr. McLeod?
Aye.
Mr. Hilty?
Aye.
Mr. Molliver?
Aye.
Mr. Musley?
Aye. General business, item B, adopt resolution 2015-19 to approve workers' compensation settlement for Teresa Lucas in the amount of $72,485.50. Presentation by Jared Sorensen.
Yes, the claimant Teresa Lucas is a 52-year-old female who was initially hired by the Emergency Medical Services Alliance, or EMSA, which was a partnership between the city and the county. On August 5th, 2002, as a paramedic two, her employment ended on September 30th, 2008, when EMSA dissolved. The claimant had several dates of accident, but continues to treat primarily for an April 25th, 2007 accident involving her right shoulder. Over the past 5 years, the medical has averaged an annual cost of $10,468. And over the life expectancy of the claimant, which is 31.24 years, this could exceed $327,000. Does not take into account potential medical treatment for the cover for a condition that she had, which may require some surgery. And in addition to that, her current restrictions for her right shoulder could qualify her for PTD and when and if she decides to stop working. The present value of the PTD at 4% discount is roughly $650,000. So this is a substantial claim over the life expectancy of this claimant. We were able to reach a contingent settlement in the amount of $249,950, inclusive of which $25,745 will be paid in attorney's fees. And the claimant will net $224,205 less cost of $2,400. The request tonight, the city's portion of that claim is 29%, which equals $72,485.50. The county's portion is 71%, which is $177,464.50. Out of the amount that we're paying out, we expect to receive back from excess insurance approximately $54,360.59. I also have Dana Taylor, who is the assistant county attorney for the county, here as well in case there's any further questions.
Sir, any questions?
$54,000 comes off the $72,000?
That's what I'm hearing.
Yeah, if it comes back.
If $54,000 comes back to us, yeah. That is correct.
What, is there any contingencies on that coming back in that amount, or is that?
No, that is what we're going to get back.
We
from
will.
The only contingency would be is that between the time we settled mm-hmm. and the time we got this approved, if anything else was paid out, we may get a little bit more back.
Right, okay.
I'll take a motion.
I'll so move.
Motion second. By Mr. Hilty. Second by Mr. McLeod. Mm-hmm. Is there any discussion? Any public comment? Bring it back to council. Any further discussion? Call the roll.
Mr. Hilty?
Aye.
Mr. McLeod?
Aye.
Mr. Molliver?
Aye.
Mr. Musley?
Aye. Next is the consent agenda.
President Musley?
Yes.
We have one walk-on item concerning the Fort King Historical Association.
Okay, that's right.
And Ms. Crow would like to make that presentation for us.
$75,000 cash. They require that 25% of that local match be in cash, and $224,500 in in-kind services. The grant itself would be for $298,000. Fort King Heritage Association in Gary will provide $85,750 in professional services and in-kind labor. And the city's commitment would be to provide the $75,000 cash match and $138,750 in professional services, which would include administrative staffing costs, engineering survey, and construction assistance for that project. The $75,000 cash match, we don't have to actually budget it at this time. We've already explained to them that the city's policy is that we typically budget a grant match once that grant is approved. They're fine with that as long as we will commit with a resolution to funding the $75,000 if the grant is approved. And I also wanted to point out that we wouldn't necessarily be expected to fund that ourselves. I think it's appropriate to ask that the Fort King Heritage Association, who is our fundraising board for this, to help in funding that cash match. And we could also ask the county to contribute in that expense. we haven't done that yet. I do want to point out that I'm not to the county to ask that, but it's certainly something that we could do. So we can proceed with that part after the fact. But in order to proceed with the grant application, the city would need to pass a resolution to commit to them.
Okay. Any questions?
No.
Okay, Sandy.
So moved.
So moved. Is there a second?
I'll second it.
A second from Mr. McLeod. Motion from Mr. Molliver. Is there any further discussion up here? Any public comment? Call the roll.
Mr. Molliver?
Aye.
Mr. McLeod?
Aye.
Mr. Hilty?
Aye.
Mr. Musler?
Aye. Congratulations, Kathy. Anything else?
No, sir.
Okay. Consent agenda. Does anybody want to pull anything from the consent agenda?
Nope, I didn't find anything.
Mr. Molliver?
Nope.
Mr. McLeod?
No, I don't see anything.
Mr. Mayor?
Yes.
I'll take a motion for the consent agenda.
So moved.
Motion by Mr. Molliver, second.
Second.
By Mr. McLeod. Is there any public comment on any item on the consent agenda? I'll bring it back to council. Any further comment? Call the roll.
Mr. Molliver?
Aye.
Mr. McLeod?
Aye.
Mr. Hilty?
Aye.
Mr. Musler?
Aye. Introduction and first reading of ordinances. There are none. Utility report.
Mark Alcher, Director of Utility, Electric Utility. Just three quick items. Number one, the Taylor swaps. The FMPA staff has been working on putting together the financing for those swaps so that we're going to be ready to act immediately when we decide to terminate those swaps. They expect to have those in place for this month. The EPA has agreed to hear a challenge to the EPA's mercury and air toxic standards for the electric utility industry. The challengers contend that the EPA should have considered costs when determining whether the regulations were appropriate and necessary under the Clean Air Act, and this is significant since power plants are the largest source of mercury emissions, and it's going to cost the electric utility industry about $9.6 billion annually to comply with those regulations. The Supreme Court is expected to issue a ruling in that case by the end of June 2015. We are doing our annual weatherization project next week on the 11th. Devereaux Kids has identified four houses in need of additional insulation and weatherproofing to make them more energy efficient. Also, the water, they install aerators and fix water leaks to help conserve water for those houses. All this work is done by employees who volunteer for the project. So that's all we have.
Anybody have any questions?
No.
Thank you, Mike.
Thank you, Mike.
Internal auditor's report. Jeannie, you got anything? No? City manager's report. Mrs. Zobler?
Thank you. At our last city council meeting, I posed a question about a facilitator to conduct our annual strategic planning retreat with city council. And I was directed to explore two possibilities. One was a company named Velocity, headed up by David Fechtman. And another one, Florida Institute of Government, headed up by Marilyn Crotty. In your packages we sent home last week, we provided you that information. And so here you have in front of you the services they will provide, the dates that are available, and the cost of those services. We anticipate having this event at the R.L. Coates Roberts Building. I'm sorry, I'm not familiar with the building.
Okay.
Currently, it's the former Taylor Bean and Whittaker Building.
It's that big old building the mayor, former mayor built.
Right. And so that's where they've offered their conference room for us to have that workshop session. In reviewing the two proposals, Mr. Feckman's proposal seems to offer a little bit more in terms of involvement with staff and follow-up. It's a full year of follow-up included in his offer. Slight price increase over Ms. Crotty. Both are well qualified, and you see the dates available.
Okay. Does anybody, I don't know the lady from the college, but I know Dave Feckman well, and it would be my recommendation that we use today. But
I've been through several with Dave and always been very satisfied with not only the day, but the feedback and information that you get afterwards.
I'm fine with that.
Okay, Mr. Mullin?
Yeah.
Do you need that in a motion, or you, there's?
No, we'll go ahead and get that agreement finalized. Are there particular dates which you see in front of you? Do you have the dates in front of you at all?
Yeah.
Mr. Feckman has indicated that his favorite dates would be February 10th, which is a Tuesday. I didn't have a chance to look if that's on a council day. And a secondary date would be Tuesday, January 27th. Are they both non-council days? Non-council days? Yes, I'm sorry. So those are his favorite dates for conducting the one-day session with City Council. February 10th or January 27th?
Both are fine with me. The January 27th is a TPO meeting, but.
I prefer the February meeting, but.
Yeah, February meeting.
I think I would go myself.
Okay.
The 27th?
February 10th.
February 10th.
February 10th.
February 10th.
That would be my preference also.
Okay. All right, we'll, if that's okay with the City Council, I'll make those arrangements, and we'll get that underway.
Okay.
Okay. I'd also like to, at this time, go ahead and thank City Staff and City Council for their work to make Light Up Ocala a very successful event. It was very, very well attended. The electric utility staff and recreation staff and all of our volunteers and police force that made that event so successful. I really appreciate that effort, and I think it was an outstanding event for the city. So again, thank you to everyone who was involved with that, and really appreciate that.
Thank you. Anything else?
No, sir.
Okay. Mayor, Police Department report?
Don't really have any police department stuff, but I will tell you about three things that are going on. Pat, do they know about this lawsuit that we've been?
I was going to talk to them about it tonight, but I sent a copy to all.
Yeah.
Well, I'll let you talk about that. And there was another one. You talking about the city seal issue?
I will, but
okay.
I've talked to the two organizations you asked me to talk to, too.
All right. And I was invited on Thanksgiving Day. I got an email from Fox News to go and talk about that issue. And so went down to Orlando and did that. I called Pat and the chief, invited them to go. But there was some other event in Tallahassee that precluded them from going. I don't know what it was, but they weren't able to attend. So anyway, but it went well. But
it wasn't on the clock either, Mayor.
Yeah, I know. You're always on the clock, Mr. Gilligan. And then I did want to thank you, all of you, for the decision you made regarding the Sister City. I know all of you probably have been inundated with emails and thank yous and things for making that decision, which was the right decision. And that was a group decision. It wasn't just me. So I appreciate all of your support on that. So thank you. And I'll let Pat talk about the legal issues.
Okay. We're at that point. City Attorney's report.
Thank you. I did send everybody a copy, I believe, of the complaint. It's been filed and obviously not served. They obviously let the press know. I found out about it from Ms. Carr. She called me in the evening, wanted to know if I knew about it. I didn't know what she was talking about. So they apparently filed it, alerted the press. But that has not been served. She's not been served.
I've not been served.
Have not been served yet. I had a telephone conference with the chief and the mayor, I think on Monday, or maybe it was over Thanksgiving sometime.
Yeah, Monday, yeah.
But we, one of the things I discussed with the chief and the mayor is that about 10 or 15 years ago, somewhere between 10 and 15 years ago, we got sued by the abortion clinic here for Chief Dean's decision not to allow special duty officers to work security at the abortion clinic. They also sued one of the individuals that was organizing the protest down there. At the time, Chief Dean had some pretty good reasons not to do it, one of which I was not in a position at the time to disclose to the court. Dealt with some police intelligence and some stuff that they were doing back then. I don't even know if that's still private or not, but it probably isn't. But if it is, I won't mention it. But there was a real good reason the chief had to do. It had to do with some intelligence they had gotten about the whole issue. Y'all may have remembered at the time the doctor that ran it at the same time sued the county. county and sued the county commissioner, and then tried to blackmail the county. He actually got criminally prosecuted for blackmail, got by the U.S. Attorney's Office, got convicted. I think Judge Hodges sentenced him to 5 or 10 years in prison. He spent almost 3 years in prison before the 11th Circuit reversed that, and he got out of prison. Anyway, I'm telling you that story is because I was representing the city in that, and the individual, I forget his name, that was also sued, that was just running the protest, he was represented by an organization called Liberty Counsel, and a lawyer by the name of Matt Staver. And so I worked very closely with Mr. Staver and his organization back then. They do a lot of pro bono First Amendment work and around the country. Mr. Staver is now the dean of Liberty Law School in Virginia. And so I mentioned how impressed I was with that organization and the lawyer that I dealt with in assisting, although they were actually assisting the individual, they also provided all their legal research to us and was very, very helpful. I also told the mayor that there's another organization I'm aware of, and you probably, and you see Mr. Staver, by the way, on television. He's a commentator oftentimes on news shows about First Amendment legal issues. I also told him about another guy named Jay Sekulow, who I know y'all have also, you might recognize the name, I'm sure you've all seen Mr. Sekulow on television. Once again, his organization does pro bono First Amendment work, and it's called the American Center for Law and Justice. So I reached out to Mr. Sekulow's organization also. Both Liberty Counsel and the American Center for Law and Justice have contacted us. Actually, the Liberty Counsel actually reached out to us, and before I even got a chance to call them or and offered their assistance, I talked to one of the lawyers with the American Center for Law and Justice, and they've also committed to assist the city in this. I think we should accept their assistance. Number one, it's free. Number two, this is what they do. They do it all around the country, all the time. They're passionate about it, obviously, and they offer their services mainly to, anybody that they believe is trying to interpret the First Amendment other than they interpret it. Obviously, the city's position here. I'm agnostic about either one. I think highly of both organizations. I think very highly of both lawyers. The Liberty Counsel is in Orlando, and I've worked with them in the past. American Center for Law and Justice is in, I believe, out of Virginia. I'd like to get permission from counsel to use one, and if y'all have a preference, I have no preference. I think they're both excellent, and they'll both get through work. It won't cost us anything. My office will still be involved in the litigation. They would serve as co-counsel, but we would probably follow their lead, given this is their area of expertise. So it's obviously going to save the city some money. I just need some, throw that out there. I need some comments, direction, or whatever.
Has the American Center Law and Justice, Mr. Sekulow's firm, have they contacted you back? Have they reviewed the case?
I spent about an hour on the phone today with one of them.
Today?
Yes, sir.
They were offering the same pro bono?
And I spent about an hour yesterday with the attorney from Liberty Counsel in Orlando.
Okay. I mean, me personally, I'm the one being sued along personally and as mayor and the police department, and same way with Greg. I mean, I would prefer, American Counsel, Justice and Sekulow's firm, personally. Greg may have a different, opinion. So, I would ask him also what he wants to do. And we haven't been served. I guess you could come back to counsel or talk to counsel and, figure out which.
No, and then maybe we should probably think about it. That's a good point, Mr. Mayor. I didn't think about that. They've all read the complaint, and
right.
I did not have discussions with either one. I just wanted to find out what the deal was and were they interested. Both of them are very anxious to do it, and both these organizations work with each other, as you can imagine, quite often. They're always on the same side, and they work together, and so both of them are the same opinion. You don't need both of them. You don't need both organizations, and they're both top-notch in what they do. I didn't consider the question of the individual suit, though, against you and the chief, and maybe I should go double back and talk to them.
I would talk to Greg also
about that, and maybe come back to council in 2 weeks and give you some more information, and y'all can make a selection at that time.
Because unless they tried to serve me at the house, my home,
right.
I've not been served.
Right. The other issue you brought up is the, another organization, this is, we've been sued by the American Humanist Association, I think is the name of it. And we also received a letter, it's the second letter we received from the Freedom from Information, Freedom from Religion organization.
Right.
And they don't like the God be with us, it's in the seal behind you, and have demanded that we remove it. I ignored the first letter, the mayor sent a letter, I guess saying we're not taking it off our seal. And so they've now sent a second letter asking for a response. The mayor asked me to look into it. One of the conversations I did have with both lawyers is, are these two organizations, it's curious to me that they both popping up at the same time, and do they work, and they said, you know, you don't know, but they do. In the past, they've had a sense that they work together.
Right.
On things, so we don't have a suit yet, I don't know if we will, but we do have a legal challenge to God be with us on our seal. Given that we have God we trust on our currency, I think that's dubious.
It's right here. Tell them when they get this taken off, we'll consider it until then.
So anyway, that's probably burbling up also. I've talked to both Liberty Counsel and American Center for Law and Justice lawyers about that too, this issue, and I think they'll participate in that if it ever comes to.
I mean, you've got this, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I mean, they haven't sued us. They're just asking for, you know, documents, you know, for us to produce, you know, how we came up with that, which I don't think we have. It was just.
Well, I was talking to Angel about it. We actually got some minutes from the 1800s.
From 1885, talked about it in God We Trust.
And we changed it to God Be With Us at some point.
Yeah, well, that was the 1960s when Jim Kirk and Willard Ayers and Mr. Cunningham.
Yeah. We'll find some minutes. It's going to be interesting at any rate for no other reason, just historically how we came about it. I think I'm interested in the answer, so.
Well, I know they asked me to, you know, tell them what we were going to do to, you know, deal with this. And I had come back to council and asked you, you know, not long ago, and we said nothing. So I wrote them and told them we weren't going to do anything. And so they wrote this letter again saying that we needed to respect them. So anyway, so yeah, that's where we are on that. And I think there was one. That's it, yeah. So those items.
Okay, so can I just assume council's all for us associating one of the other. And just a little bit more information?
I think you need to figure out, if they're being sued personally, do they need separate counsel?
I'm going to have a discussion with them about that. Given that that's how I came in contact with Liberty Counsel last time, they sued an individual, not from the city, but they sued an individual who then reached out to us, the city, to share their research and whatnot with us. So. I'll do that and get back with council.
I'd be more comfortable also having, you know, the chief's input as to who we would prefer, as well as the mayor's. You know,
I talked to the chief today. Not, I didn't address the individual suit question. Talked to the chief today. I think it's fair for me to inform you he's indifferent. He said, which one do you like? And I'm like, I like them both. I mean, I really do, but there really is no need for both of them. I have worked with Liberty Counsel, and they're in Orlando. If I had to pick one or the other, I'd probably lean towards the more local. And I mean, they're not local; they're nationwide. Yeah. They do what they do nationwide, but they're actually physically located here in Florida, not too far away. I think that's an advantage.
And I've
worked with them.
Yeah. So. Doing it pro bono, is there any expenses involved that we have to be looking at, or?
Well, any expenses, we would still be probably responsible for the cost. They do the legal work for free. I don't know about American Center for Law and Justice, but Liberty Counsel told me they make us sign a contract where they agree to do it for pro bono, but if a judgment is rendered against the city, we have to pay it,
right?
Not them, and fair enough. I mean,
I'm more talking like travel expenses and stuff like that or whatever.
I'll get their contract. Okay. Be able to tell you about that.
Yeah.
It would be minuscule compared to the.
Oh, I realize that's not a reason not to do it. I'm just curious about that.
I'll get their proposed contract, and if American Center for Law and Justice has one too, I'll get that and bring it to them.
Okay. Thank you.
The other thing I need to discuss with you, sorry it's not on the agenda, but I probably need to deal with it, is I talked to Mr. Musley today about it. I put on your package a series of letters back and forth with the latest fun and games with the school board. And Ms. Siegel, who's the attorney for the school board, for reasons I guess known only to her, does not want to use Mr. Cluster, who would previously be used as the mediator. And she suggested, as I think it, I read it as a suggestion in her letter, that we use somebody out of the county, which I don't get. We have plenty of fine mediators here, and it seems to me, since both parties are here in the county, it would make sense to have a county facilitator. And her letters are unclear to me that she's suggesting otherwise. I suggested somebody other than Mr. Cluster. I suggested Bill Futch and asked that she check him out. And she sent me a somewhat cryptic letter about, well, she still thinks it. So I finally sent her an email, which you see. Why don't you just tell me if you're objecting? which she finally sent the email and said, yeah, I'm objecting. I'm not going to agree to anybody from Marion County. I find that, and I'll reserve editorial comment about that. But anyway, she's also suggesting we not, and by the way, and she's saying her letters, a little editorial comment, I disagree with the use of anybody from Marion County. I don't think it should be somebody from Alachua County where she happens to work, but then goes ahead and suggests somebody from Alachua County that we use. So, enough said about that. Anyway, I talked to Mr. Musley about it, and she's also saying her preference is to not use a facilitator at all. Basically, use who I pick or don't use one at all. I think we need one. I think it's ludicrous not to have a facilitator or a mediator. That first meeting, the statute does not require, the statute suggests that you have one, and I think it's a good idea to have one, because otherwise the meeting becomes dominated by, I think, the lawyers, because there's nobody there to corral them in. And I know, I've dealt with Ms. Siegel enough to know that if there's nobody there, she's going to try to dominate the meeting. And of course, me being me, I'm gonna respond to that by trying not to allow it, which seems to me eliminates the whole purpose of y'all getting together, or at least Mr. Musley and staff getting together. So I do think it's important to have a facilitator. Mr. Musley's of the opinion, which I agree with, that we should probably just go ahead and get a mediator from Alachua County. I happen to know two or more that I've used in the past that I'm perfectly comfortable with. So I'll think that they're not the person she suggested. I don't even know that guy, but I'm familiar with two or three others I'm perfectly comfortable with. So I'd like to go back and suggest, yeah, we'll use somebody from Alachua County, but suggest one of these other folks and see if they're available, and try to have a reasonably fruitful and productive first stage mediation with the school board. Well, I suggested.
Right. I saw that.
I suggested that if we can't agree, let's let Judge Scott do it. I can file a motion with Judge Scott. The problem is the statute doesn't require a facilitator. It suggests that the parties agree to it, and I think Judge Scott would say, I can't make you do it. I think Judge Scott would say, I think you should, and if you want me to pick one, I'll pick one for you. But I'm not going to require you to do it, because the statute doesn't require you to do it. The problem is it's more time, effort, and money. They opposed, you remember, the school board opposed, and you saw my email to Brad about his editorial. We had to file a motion to even get them this far, and she opposed it. The school board opposed it, I believe at their lawyer's advice. They opposed even following the statute. My suspicion is if I file a motion to compel the use of, the selection of a mediator, first of all, I don't think the judge will do it because the statute doesn't require it, and it's more time, effort, and money. It really, quite frankly, is like the Vietnam thing, or arguing over the shape of the desk that they're going to negotiate over. I think if it's a good mediator, it's a good mediator. It doesn't matter where they come from, although I think it'd be important for Marion County because they kind of have a feel of the political issues, but that was my suggestion that she didn't accept. So unless y'all tell me otherwise, we'll try to get somebody from Alachua County.
We need to get this thing going.
Yeah, what you're saying is that if you use one of those names that you're comfortable with from Alachua County, this thing might move along quicker rather than going back to the, know whether she'll agree to it, but.
I think it'd be, I can't imagine having not somebody, at least moderating the two.
No.
Nothing else to say, you speak first and you speak second and, you know, whatever. I mean, and also when you have a moderator, I mean, you know, the worst thing is, I envision this, I'll be there, I'll, you know, provide whatever assistance you need, but this is a prelude to a meeting between council and the school board. You know, the lawyer's been talking at each other enough, it's time for y'all to start talking to each other.
Absolutely.
And without the moderator there, I think it'd just be a lawyer fest again, and mm-hmm. I'd like to avoid that.
Yeah.
So, anyway.
Okay. Again, I would guess, I think if you're comfortable with the two names from Alachua County.
I'll suggest them and see if I can
see if that, you know, put that ball back in
the
hole.
See if I can get an agreement.
Yeah.
If she turns that down, then what? Sir?
If she turns those two down, what do you do then?
We're going to find a way to meet, guys.
Yeah, we'll get it done.
So you can write that in the headlines. We will meet one way or another, even if we have to meet without a mediator. We're going to meet and get at least have the citizens a chance to say we tried to reconcile our differences.
We tried that last
January. The judge's orders to us. We're going to do it. I just would like it to be reasonably productive. And even if you don't reach an agreement, I think it's better to have a moderator there, you know, because they have the ability to make sure they squeeze the lemon from every possible mm-hmm. way. And then I think the citizens have a good idea that, you know, there's just no agreement there and you did everything you can.
Yeah. Okay, so you got your marching orders?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Anything else on your report?
No, sir.
Okay, informational items. We got our calendar in items. Any comments by mayor?
Yes.
Other comments?
Nope.
None. Comments by council members? Mr. McLeod?
Just quickly, thank you to everyone who reached out to me during the last few weeks. Obviously, as most of you know, I was under the weather, so I appreciate you reaching out to me, and your prayers, they're well appreciated. Thank you.
Mr. Molliver?
Yeah, congratulations, Jay, for being president. And Jim, for you, pro tem. I think we have a good group up here, and we're working as a team, and we're trying to get things done.
Okay. Thank you very much. Mr. Hilton?
Again, I'd like to add and go on your congratulations for Light Up Ocala. I think everything went smoothly. Everything went well.
Yeah, very nice. Great event.
People were happy. They hung around afterwards. You know, yeah. It was exciting.
Okay. I have no further comments. It's 5:15, and we're adjourned.
I mean, you're setting the bar pretty high.
Okay.
This meeting's under.